BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
When I was a BBC trainee in the newsroom in Belfast, I learnt a valuable principle of journalism. Narrow the distance between yourself and the story. It was 1985 and the troubles were blazing. But they weren't daft enough to trust me with security stories. I did Receptionist of the Year, New Polar Bear at the Zoo, a tourist guide to historic Downpatrick. And that day I was phoning around to find a student leader. When he proved elusive, the old school news editor chewed my ear off. He told me to get off my backside, leave the building, and find the person myself at the university, which I did in about 2 minutes. The same general principle, get there ASAP, was on my mind on the 27th of February 2022 on a railway platform in eastern Poland a few days after Russia invaded Ukraine.
We have been in a queue for a train going to Ukraine, supposedly all day. It's cold. It's now snowing. It's a bleak East European scene.
I knew I was going to do this series, so I started an audio diary just to remember a few things.
You've got to get to the story, to see it for yourself, with your own eyes.
In these programs, I'm taking you to some of the most difficult stories I've had to report, and to the obstacles that stand between journalists and the truth. For me, getting to the truth starts with getting to the story, narrowing the distance, like it was back in Belfast.
That is why the journalists in this queue of Ukrainians are trying to get into the country. There's nothing like being an eyewitness.
Often it's easier said than done.
Now I've been told that the train has left without passengers. We're going to go back, find a hotel, try again tomorrow.
We crossed into Ukraine the next day.
We're trying to get access to a hospital. You know, a lot of it is about getting an appointment with the guy who's got the power, who can say, all right, you can film or, you know, get lost.
I'm Jeremy Bowen. This is Frontlines of Journalism, Episode 6, Getting There. The power of journalism is multiplied hugely by the speed stories can move around the world, but that has its downsides. We used to be less visible. In former Yugoslavia, in the 1990s, the angry men at checkpoints found plenty of reasons to hold us up. These days, they'd also be able to Google a name and shout about a report they hated. Everyone wants to control the message.
If you take your area, Jeremy, of conflict reporting.
Emily Bell is a professor at the Columbia University Journalism School. She's on the board of the Guardian Media Group.
And think about how the camera phone has absolutely transformed how you might approach reporting that story. That's going to fundamentally challenge, I think, how we think about a reporter operating on the ground. Journalists are now targets in a way that they perhaps were not so much targets before.
Back in Ukraine, in the first few weeks of the war, the Russians were expected to break into Kyiv. One day, we thought we had permission to get to the front line facing them.
People at the checkpoint with guns, they're a bit hostile. At the moment, we can't even do any filming.
You need to calculate how long it's worth staying in harm's way to get the material you need to tell the story accurately.
There's been some incoming fire. It's kind of alarming.
There is always a risk-reward ratio.
Rotting along the road.
Eyewitness reporting from the front has been around as long as war itself. I don't think it can be replaced, but now there are techniques that mean physical proximity is not the only way to narrow the distance between yourself and the story.
This is no kind of Gaddafi stronghold in this area.
In 2011, I was in Libya, reporting on the uprising backed by NATO that was sweeping away the regime of Colonel Muammar al-Gaddafi.
We're about 30 miles from Tripoli. This town is surrounded, but there's a very clear message coming from it that they're not going to give in.
Elliot Higgins was at home, trying to make sense of a barrage of information that was coming in from all sides.
Tell us, first of all, how you got into doing this, because you don't have a conventional journalist's background, whatever that is.
I really started because I was spending far too much time on the internet. there's lots of videos and photos being shared that were being denied on one side and used as clear evidence by the other. And I really wanted to figure out, can you actually get information that allows it to be verified? With the digital age, and certainly since the advent of smartphones and social media, there's a huge amount of information being shared, and that can be cross-referenced against other information like satellite imagery that's available on places like Google Earth. Okay, that's a tank. What kind of tank is it? Who uses that tank? Where could it come from? And when you do that on a large scale, you can actually get a good sense of what's happening in a conflict zone.
Were you the first person who had this brainwave?
I'm not sure I was the first, but I think I was probably the person who kind of stuck with it for a really long time and was rather obsessed with it.
In 2014, Elliot founded Bellingcat, which has uncovered lies and injustices around the world.
Some of the earliest evidence in this Malaysia Flight 17 case was discovered by civilians.
Bellingcat.
Bellingcat.
Bellingcat. The Salisbury poisoning suspects.
All investigated from a distance using open source intelligence.
Well, I've just found myself on an open source intelligence WhatsApp group at the BBC about what's going on between Armenia and Azerbaijan, trying to pin down what happened in a massacre using the techniques that you have pioneered.
It's really, you know, over the last 10 years I've been doing this, it's gone from something that when I used to present it at journalism conferences just seemed like I was doing magic tricks on stage to something that's now core to our understanding because of what's happening in conflict zones.
Governments don't like inconvenient truths. When journalists try to uncover them, they should respect the law, though I can imagine times, say, in a dictatorship when that might not be possible. But more minor rulings are generally seen as obstacles that need to be avoided. In 2022, the Ukrainians told us we couldn't enter the town of Kherson after the Russians pulled out of it. Reporters are bad at taking no for an answer. We found a way in by getting up before dawn and tagging on to the end of a convoy of bomb disposal experts. Some journalists who did similar things were punished by losing their accreditations for a while, a price most of them would consider worth paying for enterprise. Nicholas Tomalin, a British foreign correspondent, famously said, "Success in our trade required rat-like cunning, a plausible manner, and a little literary ability." Tomlin was killed in the 1973 Middle East War. Danger is one of the biggest obstacles to getting to the truth. Earlier in this series, we spoke with Sabina Čosić, who worked for Reuters in Sarajevo when the city was besieged.
Can we talk about Kurt?
Sure.
Sabina worked with Kurt Schork, a driven and dedicated journalist. Eventually, they became a couple.
Did he ever talk to you about risk?
Yes. And his whole theory about war reporting was to take calculated risks. He was killed in an ambush in Sierra Leone on a completely routine expedition to go find the bodies of UN peacekeepers outside of Freetown. There was no indication that this was going to be a problematic day.
The day before Kurt was killed was the day my good friend and colleague, Abit Akush, was killed by the Israelis in South Lebanon.
You know, 24 hours before Kurt was killed, it was just at a moment when we absolutely didn't even know we'd be in particular danger. I couldn't believe what was happening because it's not like you're in a place where there's shelling going on and you are lying in the gutter, sheltering from it.
Exactly.
It was a lovely day.
Exactly. Peaceful, out of the blue.
That conversation does, I suppose, show that journalists can inhabit a distinct mental universe. Kurt thought it was routine to look for dead UN peacekeepers. I felt relaxed following a retreating army in a war zone.
Would we be the poorer if we didn't know? These days with social media, do you think it's still necessary for, well, for people like me to turn up?
Well, local videos and videos sent by amateur reporters or civilians, they can be easily discredited and say, oh, this is all, you know, fake news, even if they're real.
But calling my reports fake news is exactly what happened with that piece in Ukraine.
No!
A tweet, a lie, saying I faked the story, got tens of thousands of likes.
I saw that tweet.
Elliot Higgins of Bellingcat.
And I looked at the person who shared it, and they are also someone who doesn't seem to think Russia shot down MH17. They're someone who thinks the Duma chemical attacks were fake. And those kind of people generally have a big distrust of the mainstream media and the government. Often the root of that is the invasion of Iraq in 2003 or the Israel and Palestinian situation, which they feel has not been fairly reported. So they start seeing the media as the enemy.
They don't trust Bellingcat either.
We have a reputation for being a proxy for the CIA or MI5 or Mossad, whoever their favourite intelligence agency is, irregardless of how transparent we are with our work, because people can find themselves as communities that will reinforce what they already believe. I think this is actually quite core to understanding the kind of real shift in how people consume information now. It's not just about what the newspapers and the TV news are telling us. It's about what the internet is telling us, what these communities are communicating to us. Often what they're communicating to us are reinforcing our beliefs.
You mean people like to hear what they believe in?
Absolutely. A lot of the questions that come up about disinformation, for example, often see it as a kind of thing that an outside influence is doing to us. Usually it's Russia. And it's very easy to blame these outside influences. But really, it's what we're doing to ourselves as a society. We're being kind of filtered into different bubbles and communities.
The stakes feel higher for journalists these days.
The more you of the narrative of journalists being biased,
Sabina Ćosić, who worked for Reuters in Sarajevo.
Journalists being the tools of someone's propaganda. The more of that you have, the more dangers they will face. Today, it's more difficult to be a foreign correspondent and war reporter in a lot of conflict zones. The risks have multiplied exponentially.
I feel that is certainly the case, that there's a greater variety of dangers.
Correct.
My view is, I think it's because the media battlefield is more important than ever.
Yeah.
People want to master it, control it, punish people who say things they don't agree with. So I think what it means is that journalists are absolutely not seen as non-combatants by many, many protagonists in wars.
Absolutely.
Today, Sabina Ćosić is chair of a memorial fund set up to commemorate Kurt Schork, which recognises freelancers, fixers, and local journalists working around the world.
You know, your partner was killed.
Yes.
And he was possibly the most dedicated journalist I've ever met.
Yes.
Was it worth it?
I'd be willing to bet he would say yes.
Would you, I mean, I hope it's not getting too personal. Would you agree with that?
I mean, for me, no. For me, it wouldn't have been worth it. But it's not about me.
Kurt used to say that in a single day in a war zone, you could see the best and the worst of human behavior. His reporting reflected that. Kurt wanted to make a record, not just of heroes or war criminals, but of people trying to live. Journalists couldn't get to the truth without people. Some make stories possible. Others do all they can to stop them. Next time on Front Lines of Journalism.
When Harvey Weinstein called me up and said he wanted to talk about the story off the record, I said, absolutely not.
Sources and spin. Front Lines of Journalism is presented by me, Jeremy Bowen. The producer is Georgia Catt. The assistant producer is Sam Peach. Additional research by Rob Byrne. Series mixing by Jackie Marjoram. The series editor is Philip Sellers. Please rate and leave a review to help others find us.